I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Go Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5 kilometre run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5 minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Vichy. Vichy is a doctor-founded dermocosmetic brand with 90 years of skincare expertise. Vichy has established the link between health and beauty and led the way in skincare innovation. Powered by active ingredients, product formulations are clinically proven, hypoallergenic and dermatologically tested for sensitive skin, making Vichy a pioneer in skin health science. Taking a holistic approach to skin health, Vichy is committed to provide safe and effective skincare routines for every skin type at every life stage. All Vichy products are available in pharmacies nationwide. Hello, I hope you are well today. Thank you so much for tuning in to season 8 of The Good Glow. Oh my God, I just cannot believe how fast the time has gone since I started this podcast. I wanted to start season 8 with someone really special to me, and this week I speak to Shannon Joyce, also known as the Big C and Me. Shannon has been through so much over the past 7 years. She was diagnosed with lymphoma when she was 19. She's 26 now and has just finished treatment for her third diagnosis of cancer. Over the last couple of weeks, she thought she had relapsed for a fourth time after finding a lump. Luckily, this lump was not cancerous, and she's been given the go-ahead to embark on the last leg of this journey. A transplant in Dublin in the next couple of weeks. Shannon knows what she's up against, but her strength and positivity is infectious. She loves her family so much. She knows the next few months will be really tough, but she's determined to do it. Today, she speaks about why she hasn't been sharing too much over the last couple of weeks. She tells me about her support network and her plans for the future. This is such a beautiful episode full of positivity, and I really hope you enjoy it. Shannon, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
God, where do I start, Shannon? You've been through so much, and I'm sure, I don't know how you feel, and we'll talk about this, but everyone's saying, how do you stay so positive? I'm sure you're not positive all the time, but you got some great news that you shared with everyone yesterday. So just tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening with you over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so absolutely amazing news. For anyone who follows me on Instagram, you'll have seen at the start of January, I was supposed to be going in for a transplant. Now, because the transplant is from an unrelated donor, you're relying heavily on donations of people who match your blood system and match your cells and things like that. So I had a match that was pulled last minute, so things kind of went up in the air. We weren't sure if we were going to find another match because we found it quite difficult to find the first match. So my amazing coordinator in St. James's in Dublin went on her way, and she started digging and looking for a transplant. And you go to the worldwide donor, the bank and things like that. And we found out last Friday that we found a second donor. So it's all systems go now for my second transplant.
That's such amazing news, and I'm sure such a relief for you. And we were in touch last week, and you didn't know how things were going to go because you told me that you found a lump.
Yeah, so this is something I haven't shared on Instagram yet. It's so raw, and it was such a scary time for the last couple of weeks for me. So I just didn't share it. Basically, after the transplant kind of got cancelled, a few days later, I hadn't been feeling very well. And as I normally do, as you probably do yourself, Georgie, you check yourself, like, I don't know, as a paranoia, but I check myself all the time. So I hadn't been feeling great, and I was checking myself kind of every day. And then the day of my birthday, so the 5th of January, I felt my groin and the exact same place where I'd been diagnosed from all three times, there was a lump. And I was like, oh my God, this, like, you know, when your stomach just drops and your heart drops and you know there's something wrong. So I called Seamus, who's my oncologist, and he like brought me straight up, got me organized for biopsies. So for the last 2 weeks, I've kind of taken a little break from social media because nobody really knows this because I just haven't spoken about it. It's just been a very overwhelming experience because honestly, we kind of thought that we were looking at another relapse. And thankfully, I had a PET scan the other day. that came up that it was clear. So I do have a lung infection, but like as I was speaking to you last week, we were kind of heading for more treatment and putting the transplant off because this lump was so familiar and I had a lot of symptoms. But it just goes to show if people do have symptoms and they do think that it's cancerous because they might have a history, it's not always bad news, you know, because I really thought this was bad news and I really thought that, oh God, here we go again, I'm going to face more chemo. But it actually wasn't. So there are miracles. There definitely are.
What do you do in obviously while you're waiting for a result that's pure torture, but when you get a call and they tell you that it's not cancer and you're so used to hearing that it is. What do you feel like in that moment?
I cried more hearing that it wasn't cancer than I think if he said it is cancer. You know, I had had the PET scan on Tuesday morning, and because you're radioactive for like 10 hours afterwards, when I came home, I went straight to my room and because Roisin was downstairs at Barry, so I couldn't like be around her. So I was up in my bedroom and then Seamus called at like 6 p.m. or whatever and he told me and I kept going, are you sure? And he was like, I've had a look at it, I'm positive. He was like, it's completely clear, the pelvic area is completely clear. The lumps are actually just because you have this lung infection, your lymph nodes are just trying to clear out this infection in your body. And I was like, oh my God, for once my lymph nodes are doing what they're supposed to do and I'm freaking out thinking that it's cancer. So I called Barry. I was like, Barry, come up. Seamus rang and he walked into the room and he was like his face. Because to be fair, we had 2 weeks of prepping for another diagnosis. So he walked into the room and I was hysterical and he just hugged me. He was like, oh no. And I was like, no, I was like, it's really good. I was like, it's not cancer. He actually couldn't speak. I couldn't speak. I was like, oh my God, I can't. Like, we couldn't believe it. It was just the most overwhelming feeling because as you say, you're always so used to getting like negative and bad news. And then when it's good news, I was waiting for my reaction for it to be cancer. So my reaction for it to not being cancer, it was just overwhelming. It was amazing. Like, I was hyper, you know, when it actually sunk it, I was hyper about it. I was just so relieved. It's just such a relief because that waiting period is horrendous. Like when you're waiting for results, it's horrific. And that's probably a question I get asked on Instagram a lot from followers is, I'm waiting on results. Like, how do you cope? What do you do? Normally, I would say I would surround myself with my friends and my family. And then it makes it harder because you're in 11-5 lockdown and you can't see anybody. So it's literally for the last 2 weeks, it has been me, Barry, Roisin at home every day waiting. It's just been crazy, but thankfully it's good news. And then we had found out that we had a donor. So I found that out last Friday, but I couldn't say anything because there was no point telling Instagram, I have a donor, it's great. And then the following week saying, oh, actually my cancer is back. So I just didn't say anything until I knew what was actually going on. So when we found out then that it wasn't cancer, I was just overjoyed to be able to share the news that it was, that I have a donor. It's there's nothing cancerous and I'm good to go.
That's just such incredible news. I'm so happy for you. And you're actually glowing. You look really well. And I'm just so excited for you to kind of move on to this next chapter and finish this chapter that you're in at the moment. Tell us a little bit about the transplant, because I think for a lot of people, they may not understand exactly what that is or what it means. So just for anyone listening, can you just talk us through what will be happening to you?
Yeah, so a transplant is, so it's complete isolation and they say you're in hospital for about 4 to 6 weeks. So kind of I gear myself up for 6 weeks and then anything before that is a bonus. So I'd always kind of put my mindset into a 6 week isolation hospital stay. And basically what the transplant is, it's you do 7 days of conditioning chemo. So when you go in, they give you like chemo in its truest form. It just completely wipes you. So, you know, normally like your hemoglobin, your platelets, your blood cells, they're a higher number. They basically wipe them to zero. And then when they're at zero, they give you new stem cells. So an autologous transplant is what I had last year, is when they had harvested my own stem cells and gave them back to me. But obviously that didn't work. So now so if that doesn't work, they'll normally do an allogenic transplant. Now everyone is different. Some cases they might just go straight in with what's called an allogenic transplant, which is a donor transplant. If you have siblings, they can be tested to see if they're a match and you can actually get your cells off a sibling. If I do have a brother, but we actually have different dads, so we're not full siblings and they couldn't test him because of that reason. It has to be a full sibling. So when you don't have a full sibling, they go to, like, there's a worldwide donor bank. So it's not necessarily somebody from Ireland. It's somebody from anywhere in the world that have donated or have signed up to become on the bone marrow register as a donator. So when they don't, when they sign up to be a donor, obviously all of their information is on the system. And then we'd say, when I come forward, you have a transplant coordinator then in St. James's Hospital. They then go on to the blood bank and they find your match. And, like, it's very tricky because there's millions and billions of people on this register. So it's very hard to find an exact match. So then they find your unrelated donor and basically they harvest from that person. You're brought into hospital. So, like, I don't have exact dates yet, but say if I'm admitted on the 3rd of February, I'll have 7 days of chemotherapy. So it'll be really hard, really tough chemo to completely wipe my immune system for 7 days. Then it's called day zero. So the day of your transplant is day zero. That's when you get your brand new immune system. And then gradually for the next 14 days, you watch your neutrophils come back up. You watch your hemoglobin, your platelets start coming back up. And you think as soon as you get the new immune system and the new cells that that will start happening. But it takes time. And it can be quite a disheartening transition because you're watching every day. And then someday they might come in and say, OK, your neutrophils are 0.1. And then the next day they could go back down to 0.0. And it has to be like 0.5 for you to be able to go home, for you to be able to leave the hospital. So it's just a waiting game then for like 14 to 21 days after day zero, which is your transplant day, for you to fully, well, not fully recover, because it takes months to fully recover. But it will take kind of definitely another 3 weeks for your body to start coming around to the new cells.
And when you're going through that process, are you bedbound? Are you able to get up and kind of walk around? Are you able to have visitors?
So last year you could have visitors, but because of COVID now, you can't have visitors. Last year I just had my mom, my dad, Barry and my stepmom come to visit me. Denise and Caron actually came in to visit me as well one evening. So you can have visitors, but because of COVID now, you can't have anybody, which I think is just like, I'm trying not to think about that too much because I think that's very difficult, because even though you're bedbound for the first 7 days and you're going through chemo, you're kind of okay. You're like, you know, you're the usual chemo, you're sick and you're tired. But like, I was able to get up and go for a stroll around the hospital. I went to the shop, like we go and grab a coffee outside and Costa and, you know, get out of the room for a while. But this time you have to stay in the room. You're like, as soon as you go into the room, you're in the room. And that's because of COVID as well. So everything has kind of changed now in terms of transplant and visitors and what you can and can't do. So it definitely is going to be a bit more intense. But as soon as you go to day zero after that, so the process of your blood starting to come back up, completely bedbound. Like I remember Barry saying to me, I came up to the hospital and like, he came up from the Wednesday to the Friday. And he was like, I didn't see your eyes for the 2 days that I was there. He's like, you weren't awake for the 2 days, even though I knew somebody was there and it was lovely to have that comfort. Like it was almost pointless having them there because they were sitting on a chair for 10 or 12 hours a day and I was just asleep. But then your body is recovering when you're asleep as well. So it was good to rest and it was good to get all the sleep. But yeah, like I was in a lot of pain. I was very discomforted. I was sick, but like it actually passes quite fast.
Mm. How old are you, Shannon?
26. I was 26 on the 5th of January.
How do you mentally prepare yourself for something like this? How do you keep picking yourself up? And how do you get through those days knowing, you know, what's ahead of you? Like, what are you thinking now heading into this time, this isolation?
Because you know what? Roisin, like, I think she has a massive part on why I'm positive and why I fight so hard. Because I was 19 when I first had cancer and I had no child, obviously. And you know, it's like you obviously go through, but you're just going through it. Like you don't think about anything. But now I'm like, I have to be here because I have to walk her to the gates for her first day of school and I have to see her get her communion and I have to bring her shopping and we have to go get our nails done together. And you know, I want to be here for all these things and I will fight to the absolute end to be here for all these things for her. So I think having her was probably the biggest blessing that ever happened to both of us, because I think without her, I probably would be in a lot of like in a bit more of a rut about it. I'd probably be a bit angrier about it. And, you know, I wouldn't probably fight as hard. But knowing that I have somebody who looks up to me and somebody who needs me, you have to kind of just do it. You have to pick yourself up and just do it.
And does she understand now that you're going to go to hospital, but you're going to get better and things will, I suppose, only improve, you know, for your family? And like, she's so young, it's so, it must be so hard for her to understand.
Yeah, like I've had cancer for kind of more than half her life. You know, from what she can remember, it's always been mommy has been sick. Like a while ago, for instance, I had to go for the COVID swab because I have to go for a bronchoscopy tomorrow. That's another story. For this lung infection, so I had to get the swab. So her and Barry dropped me off to the hospital and she was like, bye ma'am. And I could see that she was kind of like, is she coming home today or is she staying in hospital or is she not? And when I came back out and got into the car, she was like, ma'am, you're back. And I was like, Roisin, I was only gone for 10 minutes. And she was so excited that I was back. So she kind of associates like hospitals and me going in and I'll be there for a while, and she knows that I was gone last year. But like, it's mad how much they grow up in a year. Like, she was only 3 last year and I can see now that she's 4. Even though it's only a year, she understands it much more. So like, we've kind of spoken to her, but I don't want to overwhelm, like, because I don't know what's going on in her little head as well. So I don't want to like overwhelm her with information. So we've told her that I'm going to hospital to get better and this is the last time. So, you know, we've kind of reassured her, this is it. Once I go, I'll be gone for a little while. But once I'm back forever. And she's kind of taken that then and she's okay. And I have to live in Dublin for 3 months after the transplant because you have to be like, you have so many appointments in the first like 3 months. You have to be kind of close to the hospital. Plus with an allogenic transplant, things can go wrong kind of quickly. You can get infections and you can get like graft versus host, things like that. So you have to be quite close to the hospital. So we've been looking at apartments and places to stay. So like, we were looking at an apartment. Oh, I actually got approved for an apartment this morning. So that's more good news. It's just all good news this week. So I was showing her a while ago and she was like, is that where we're going to live now, ma'am? And I was like, that's where I'm going to live with Nan. And then you can come up on weekends and visit, because I don't want to take her out of school or preschool for the whole 3 months. And I think it would be very hard for her to kind of move away from her own home anyway. So I was like, you'll come up here and like, we'll visit. She was like, which one is my room? And you know, there's like a little walk around and she was like, oh, we can go out there and there's a playground on site. And it's just, you know, she's kind of excited about it. She's excited because she thinks we're moving to a new house.
Oh, it's so cute. Their innocence is just so adorable.
It is.
When you first got sick, Shannon, you said you were 19. Was it a huge shock to you?
Yeah, like I was I would have considered myself as somebody very healthy when I was 19. Like, I played a lot of sport. I played a lot of camogie. I was training like 5 nights a week. I was going to gym classes. I was camogie training. And then like I started getting this pain in my groin and then I started getting quite sick. So I worked in a bar at the time and I was also working part-time as in a hairdresser's. And like, it was this, I remember working in the hairdresser's and it was a really busy Saturday and I was washing someone's hair and I said to the owner, I was like, I'm really sorry, but I was like, I feel really sick. And it was a Saturday morning. So she was like, were you out last night? I was like, no, I wasn't. But I was like vomiting and I was in loads of pain. And it just, that went on for a little while, because when I'd gone to the doctor, they gave me anti-inflammatories and they gave me sickness tablets and pain relief, because they were like, it's an ingrown hair and you have an infection and it's nothing to worry about. And I'd never heard of lymphoma until the day I was diagnosed the first time. I'd never even heard of lymphoma. Obviously, I'd heard of cancer, but lymphoma was like, was alien to me. So when I then took a really bad turn at home and like, my mom called my dad and she was like, you're going to have to bring her to Annie. Like, she's fainted and she's in loads of pain for the last night. And, you know, she's getting sick a lot. And I was like, and looking back now, like, I was grey and I was, after falling away to nothing, like, I was like, I wouldn't be heavy, but like, I'm not petite. I'm not tiny either. But like, I was like skin and bone and I had lost weight and I had been having night sweats, but I didn't realize it because I just thought I was warm at night. You know, like, it was just, I just didn't know anything. You know, I wasn't aware of the symptoms. So I think that's why it's so important to be aware of all these different symptoms and kind of be a voice and get your body checked if you think there's something wrong. So when I went to A&E, I went to like back to my doctor, and because I was in so much pain, my dad came with me and he was like, I think she definitely needs to go to a hospital and get checked. And the doctor's like, yeah, look, I think you do, but I don't think you need to worry. Like, I don't think it's anything sinister. It's just she has an infection. She can't clear herself. So I was in hospital for 2 weeks and then they did a biopsy on like a it was like a Monday morning, and the Friday, which was the 4th of July 2014, two of the doctors, I'll never forget it, two of the doctors came into the room, like my room, and I was sharing with four women. And they were like, my mom was sitting at the end of the bed, my cousin was there, and they were like, we have your results, can we have a word with you? And I was like, yeah, you know, I thought they would just do it there and then, pull the curtain kind of thing. And they were like, could you come over to the day room? And I remember like looking at my mom and my mom looking at me, and I just went, well, that's not good really, mom, is it? And I kind of tried to make a joke out of it. And like, when I looked at them, they weren't smiling, they weren't laughing, they weren't joking. So I was like, okay, this is really serious. But at that stage, cancer still hadn't entered my head, like it really didn't. And when I sat down, I sat across from the doctor, and he said, look, your results come back, I'm really sorry, but it's lymphoma. And my mom burst out crying, and then she started like hyperventilating, and she's asthmatic, so she like couldn't catch her breath. And I was like, is that bad? And my mom goes, that's cancer, isn't it? And they were like, yeah, we're really sorry. And then I was like, oh my god, you know, it kind of just hit me then like a ton of bricks. Poor mom had to be carted out of the room having an asthma attack. I was like, taking all of the light off me. And thankfully my cousin was there. She came in and she was like, what's going on? And I was like, I have cancer. And it was just, it's a really surreal moment, because I think at any age you think it's never going to happen to you and it's never going to come to your door. But at 19, like, I was quite innocent. Looking back, obviously, when I was 19, I thought I was like, I knew everything, and, you know, I knew better than everyone. And looking back, I was actually a baby. Do you know what I mean? I really was. I needed my mom and dad, and I needed like that support, and I had it, and it was amazing. But yeah, it was just very surreal being told at 19 that you have cancer.
God, your youth was really kind of taken from you in that day. But I think it's really important when you say, you know, I'd lost loads of weight and I was grey, and you're not the first person on this podcast to have said, like Ciarán Byrne said, he didn't recognise himself anymore. I didn't recognise myself anymore. There's loads of Breast Cancer Ireland ambassadors who say the same thing. And I suppose when I do corporate talks now, I always say, you know, check in with yourself. Ask yourself, how do I feel today compared to this time last year? Mm. Or, you know, look in the mirror. And if there's a little voice in the back of your head telling you that there's something wrong, you really, really need to listen to that.
Yeah. And I've said that so many times. I know that the doctors are the professionals and, you know, but like, you know your own body best. I know they can say, oh, this mightn't be anything, this is fine, this happens all the time, it's a little cyst, or it's this or it's that. But like, there's always that niggly voice or that gut feeling. And I think you really have to trust yourself in those situations and kind of go with it. Because when I was 19, yes, I had the lump, I'd gone to physio, I was like, it's nothing, it's, you know, it's just this lump. But because I was so sick, that's when we realised it was serious and I was hospitalised. But like, in 2019, when I was diagnosed again, like, I had the lump, but I wasn't sick. So if I had never felt the lump, God only knows how long it would have been there for.
Wow. You know, you're really good at checking yourself, Shannon. Like, I'm would be quite afraid to check my breasts, just because I have to really like build myself up and like breathe and like really like give myself a talking to and go, right, I'm going to do it now. And how are you so good at checking? Like you said, you check almost every day. Like, how do you do that?
Because do you know what it was? When I was 19 and I met Seamus O'Reilly, my oncologist, Professor O'Reilly, for the first time, and he said to me, you have a quite aggressive form of lymphoma. It's called T-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it spreads like wildfire. So he said, the earlier, like all, like, you know, breast cancer as well, early detection saves lives, it really does. But he was saying, you know, the lymphoma, it spreads so quickly because there's lymph nodes all around your body. So it might start in your groin, but before you know it, it's in your stomach and your armpits and your neck and your chest, and it's everywhere. So that kind of always stuck with me. And I was going, okay, if it's going to come back, then I'm going to find it early, because I know that's my highest chance of being kind of saved, and that's my highest chance of getting into remission again and becoming cancer free again. And I suppose, like, from I went from 2014 till 2019 without any cancer. So I had almost 5 years with clear scans, no cancer, feeling really well. So I probably got a bit like laid back about it, and I wasn't checking all the time. And, you know, like yourself, it's kind of like, okay, build myself up. let's feel, let's have a check. And then like, there's nothing there. You're like, oh, I'm grand this week, you know? And then it was July again of 2019. And I was in the shower and I felt, and I was like, oh my God, you know, cause I knew I had checked like maybe 2 or 3 weeks before that. Cause I wasn't doing it all the time, but I just had a little check. I had a little pain in my leg and I was like, I'll just have a little check. And I checked and I was like, oh, like, that's a very familiar lump, you know? And then I thought I was a bit of a drama queen and I was like, am I just feeling this now because I have a little pain in my leg? And I, you know, so I called Barry and I was like, feel this. And like, he went pale and he was like, because we weren't together when I first had cancer. So this would have been like mm-hmm. our first time kind of going through cancer together. And he was like, that's a lump. And I was like, I know. I was like, it actually is. So again, straight up to Seamus, and he felt it, and he sent me for biopsies, and the same happened last year. And it was just because I was out of a transplant. Like, I was only out of the transplant from November. So I was very conscious and I was checking myself. But like that now, I was building myself up every time, you know. I was like, and I wouldn't have been checking every day, but I was like, okay, breathe, go do it. Because if you do it, you're putting your mind at ease. Whereas I was sitting down going, I wonder if there's a lump and I wonder if it is something. And I, you know, whereas I just checked and I was able to put that kind of thought aside. And then when I checked last year, yeah, so that was last year, I hadn't been feeling unwell. Like, I was tired from the transplant and stuff, but I felt the lump again. And then I suppose this time, like in January just gone, when I felt the lump and I went to Seamus and he said, you just know, he's like, you're normally never wrong with these things. You know, he said, you really do know your own body. And I was checking every day because I had felt unwell. So all over Christmas, like, I, you know, I just wasn't feeling too good. Like, my stomach, I was getting like really bad stomach cramps. I was kind of getting little pains in my legs, things like that, which the lung infection do actually answer for now. But at the time we didn't know what it was. And then the lump came up. So like, the lump literally, because I had checked on the 4th of January and there was no lump. I checked the morning of the 5th and the lump was there. So I knew I had caught it straight away. So that was a massive kind of ease to me that I knew that I had caught it straight away. So if it was cancer again, we would just go and get it sorted.
Wow. I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. But first, I wanted to tell you about Vichy's iconic Hydration Serum Mineral 89. Enriched with hyaluronic acid and 89% Vichy volcanic water, which is naturally found in French volcanoes and rich in 15 minerals essential to skin health. This beautifully light gel serum gives your skin immediate hydration and glow. Think of it as a daily multi-mineral for your skin. The perfect first step in any skincare routine, suitable for all skin types. It can be used every morning and or night after cleansing your skin. For a 25% discount on Mineral 89 50ml or 75ml, use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on marspharmacy.ie. The offer is available on online purchases only until midnight, February 28th. Now, back to my conversation.
You know, people would always, and I always see it written about you, you're so positive and all the support you get on Instagram, like over 100,000 followers, that must be a lot of pressure for a 26-year-old with so much on their plate. And, you know, how do you feel when people say you're positive? Because you've come on and you've said, you know, I'm not positive all the time. What do your bad days look like?
But that's the thing. Like, I think everybody on Instagram, that anyone that has any bit of a following, you kind of do put your best foot forward and you always kind of show your best side. And I think we're all probably a little bit guilty of that. And I just, not that I get annoyed about it or anything, like, because obviously it's lovely to hear that you're a positive person and, you know, people find me positive. But I do have bad days as well and I try to show them. But obviously when you're having bad days, you don't want to come on to 100,000 people and be like, I feel like crap today. And because you don't want to bring the mood down. You don't want to be the person that, you know, someone's reading you. Because, do you know, I actually, you know, the way it was Blue Monday, that's the most bizarre thing ever, you know, because I was reading things and people were making excuses as to why they were feeling crap because it was Blue Monday. And I was going, but that's having like a domino effect on everybody else that's reading it, going, oh, it's okay to feel like that because today is Blue Monday. But if they never knew about it, would you feel like that? So I'm very conscious of just trying not to bring the mood down too much, or I try to be as real as I possibly can. But to be honest with you, Georgie, there's a lot of badness on social media at the moment. Like, there's an awful lot of trolling going on. There's an awful lot of horrible messages coming from people with anonymous profiles and like just horrible things coming on. So I think that has probably stopped people showing bad sides as well. It definitely has putting me kind of a step back as to showing a bad side on social media, because I don't want to be targeted and I don't want to be trolled. So I try to just show all the happy stuff, but that's not right either. So you have to be realistic about it, because not everyone is happy every single day of the week. So I'm not positive all the time. I try to be positive and I try to look for the good in every day, but there are days that I can't get up out of bed, and like Barry will take Roisin downstairs and I just go, I'm having a day, and like I'll stay in bed and until I feel like I'm able to just get up and face it, because I feel hard done by, because I've had such a crap couple of years and it's not fair and why me, you know, that kind of attitude. And you just have to snap out of it as well, I think. But those are the days then, not because I don't want to show it on social media, but maybe I don't feel like it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just...
Oh, I know 100% what you mean. When you are feeling anxious and a little bit overwhelmed about everything going on in your life, like who do you turn to? Who gives you the pep talk? Who picks you up off the floor?
Barry. Like I feel so sorry for him, because for the last 2 years it's just been about me, you know, like our relationship has been pushed to the side, like he has been kind of pushed to the side, our family has been kind of pushed to the side. It's like I've been the priority for the last 2 years, and even now, like we had a really long chat last night because I wasn't feeling great, but I was very overwhelmed because I was like, I really thought I was going back in for more treatment. I really thought this was bad news. And he had it, like we had a big long chat, and I was like, is it going to be like that forever? Next year, am I still going to feel like if I don't feel well, is it going to be cancer again? I was like, am I ever going to get rid of that mindset? And he was like, it'll take time and it will. And then he was like, I know, I was, because he was so worried for the last 2 weeks as well. None of us have slept. We've just been getting by for the last 2 weeks. And I went to bed then and I was thinking about him and I was going, that was just him giving me this pep talk to tell me that I'll be okay, to tell me that everything will be okay. But he has just gone through torture for the last 2 weeks as well. So I kind of, you know, you have to think of them as well and think of the people around you going through it too. But like my dad would be brilliant as well. Like he brings me back down to earth, so I could ring him sobbing, like hysterical on the phone, can't even talk. And then he'd be like, you need to calm down. You just need to calm down now. Whereas my mom, then, we're so alike. If I ring my mom crying on the phone, she'll just start crying on the phone.
So I feel so lucky that I've met your mum and dad at the late that night, and your mum was sitting beside my mum, and I said to your mum afterwards, I thought your arm was going to fall off because she was waving at us so much. But she's such an amazing person. It must have been nice to be able to ring her last week and say that it wasn't cancer.
Oh my God, it was. Do you know what? Ringing my mum and dad and telling them that it wasn't cancer, because I rang dad and I was like, Seamus just rang me, and he was like, right, okay, go on. And to be able to say it's not cancer, he was like, and my stepmother was in the background. She was like, oh my God. So she was like hysterical. Dad was like, I wasn't really worried anyway. And I was like, yeah, you were. No. And he, like, you know, he was distraught. And then I rang mom and I was like, this is going to be emotional, because whatever I tell her, she's just going to start crying. Like I'd be very like that as well. I'm a very emotional person and she's the same. And I rang her and I was like, mom, Seamus rang me. And like her, I knew how she was feeling, you know, that kind of way. I knew her like heart was in her, like pumping out of her chest. I knew she was like ready to faint. And I was like, mom, it's not cancer. And she was like, what? I was like, it's not. She was like, oh my God. And she was bawling. I was crying. You know, it was just amazing to be able to tell them, because like as a parent now, I can only imagine the worry and the stress they've been under for the last couple of years. Because when you're a child kind of going through it, or when you're someone who's not a parent going through it, you kind of just think about yourself and you don't really think about others around you. But now that I'm sick, and I think, like, God forbid, touch wood, like when Roisin has an infection, or when she has like when she's teething, or you know, when she was those things, my heart was broken for her. I was like, I don't want my baby to be sick and I want her to be okay. So I can only imagine, like, because to my parents I'm still their baby, you know. I'm very much spoiled and I'm very much a daddy's girl, and I have a very close relationship with my mom, and like my parents are my best friends genuinely, and even my stepmother, like we're very, very close. She's been in my life since I'm 7, you know. So, oh my God, nearly 20 years. So like we've such a close bond as well. And I hate the fact that I put them under that stress, and I hate the fact that they have that worry, but I've said that to them and they've always said, we wouldn't have it any other way. You know, well, obviously we'd have you never to be sick, but we were always going to be there for you, and we're always going to have you as our number one. But I'd love to I'd love if they just were able to not have that worry hanging over them all the time. Because I can imagine as parents, they do have that worry.
And it's that thing that, like, when you ring your mum and they answer and they go, what? And they just want you to be like, no, it's fine. Everything's fine. Because I don't think mums will ever recover from their child being sick like that.
I don't think so. I think it's like, I honestly think, like, post-traumatic stress, I suffered it really badly when I was sick the first time. But I honestly think that people that go through it with you can suffer from it as well. Like, it has to have an effect on them. Do you know, it has to, like, even like you said, now last week, I sent my dad a WhatsApp and I said, I think it was like 10:30 in the evening. I was on steroids and I was really hyper, and like, I was like, you need to go away because I've been talking just since 8 o'clock this morning. So I was up, I was going to bed, but I wasn't tired. And I WhatsApped my dad and I was like, are you up for a video call? And like, he rang me straight away and he was like, what's up? What's wrong? And I was like, oh, I just wanted to talk to somebody. And he's like, don't do that to me again. And I was like, do what? I was like, I didn't do anything. And he was like, yeah, but Shannon, every time you text, and if you text at 10:30 at night, I don't think it's good. And I was like, okay, sorry. Because he's gotten so many calls when, like, I've been rushed to hospital, or like, Barry rang him last year and he was like, the ambulance is on the way, she's not great, and, you know, she's really sick. And mom and dad walked in and I was like in excruciating pain on the couch, and, you know, they had to like see that and then see an ambulance take me away. And it's just very worrying for them, I think. So I really do think that people who are going through it, obviously you are number one, you need to mind yourself, but you also need to like just check in with those around you as well, just to make sure that they're okay.
There's just something about you that I feel like you believe that this time it's different. I feel like it's almost like, you know, you're going to get your transplant and you really believe that you'll never be sick with this again. Honestly, that how you feel deep down?
100%. And a lot of things as well, like, obviously we both adore Denise Kenny, and a lot of her like manifesting and watching her and her meditation things, that would have been something I was never into before. And I won't lie and be like, I do it all the time, but I manifest it quite a lot. I'm like, okay, this is it. This is the last time I'm going to be sick, and this is the last time I'm going to have to go through this. And like, and I just know it. Because, and so when I found the lump, I was really surprised, because I was like, no, a fourth time wasn't on the agenda. That wasn't in it for me. And even last week I had told my aunt about the lump, and then she said, like, you know, what do you think is going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, do you know what? It's not. I'm going to go in for the transplant, and I'm going to be home and everything by the summer, because Roisin is starting school in September and I need to bring her to get her uniform. And she was going, okay, but like, what if it, and I was like, but it's not. So I was like, let's just leave it there. In my head, I was like, I'm going for the transplant soon. I'm not going back in for treatment for 3 months. I'm going for the transplant and I'm going to be home and I'm never going to be sick again by the summer. And that is just going to be it. Like, I'm not having it. I'm like, putting my foot down.
The power of positive thinking.
Last year when I had a meeting with Dr. Bacon and James's, and he spoke, this is the first time I ever learned about transplants or heard the word transplant. And he said to me, there's two types, in autologous where you use your own cells, or there's an allogenic where you use somebody else's cells. And he was recommending the autologous because it like isn't as hard and it's your own cells coming back into your body. So there's not much risk of infection and things like that, or there's a lower risk. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine, whatever. And I, in my head afterwards, I was like, I really think I need an allogenic transplant to get me better. And it was always kind of a thing that I, not that I wanted, but I would have preferred. And now I'm glad I didn't. And I did listen to him and do the auto, because if I had done the allogenic last year, I wouldn't have had the chance to do it again. Whereas if you have your own cells first, you can then get a donor. But if I had chosen the donor last year and relapsed, I wouldn't have been able to get another donor, because I already had like foreign cells in my body. Like, my body sees the cells as a foreign object. So I wouldn't have been able to get it done again. So it's just thinking back on the last year and a half, it's just crazy how it's kind of panned out, because I always believed I needed like a donor transplant, and it was always in my head. So this is just like, I'm kind of relieved I'm getting it done, because I'm like, right, this is what's going to put me in remission forever, and this is what's going to work.
Yeah, it's like you really feel it in your gut that this is the right thing to do. When you think about, you know, life after this, and, you know, like even on Instagram, your name is Big C and Me, and cancer has been such a part of your life. And I know that you are so ready for it not to be anymore. I think you've done amazing work in terms of awareness. I think you've given so many people so much hope. And when you look to this time next year, for example, do you think about that and what, you know, life might look like for you?
Honestly, I think after this transplant and I'm home and I'm recovered and, you know, we're getting back to normal, I think Instagram is going to come second. I'm going, not that I've ever prioritized it over anything like my family or anything, but I just think I have kind of taken on the pressures and the, like, what's wanted and what's needed from you from a social media point of view. And I've probably put a lot of my time and effort into that over the last year and a half. And I just think maybe next year my family are going to be my number one. And like, we're going to focus on just the three of us spending really good quality time together, because we don't have that at the moment, because I can't do much. Like, we could go for a little walk, but like, I'm out of breath really easily. I'm in quite a lot of pain as a side effect from chemotherapy. I have neuropathy, so peripheral neuropathy, where like my hands and feet are like constantly like pins and needles, and they can get quite sharp pain. So I can't walk for a long period of time. And it's just, I want to just focus on getting myself back to 100% healthy body, healthy mind, and then focus on me, Barry and Roisin. I want to, like, we want to go on a holiday. We want to, like, just go on hikes. We want to get more into outdoors. And, you know, we want to do a lot of things that we haven't had the chance to do. So I think next year, for the next, like, 12 to 18 months, they're going to be my focus. The two of them, and obviously COVID dependent, just spending so much quality time with my family. Because it's really, it's so precious. It really is.
Oh, it's absolutely. And I think that's what I suppose COVID has taught us all, is that they're the moments, even if you're just hiking up the hills. I mean, it's just so precious. And in your bio on Instagram, I hope you don't mind me asking, you say that you have an embryo. Do you ever kind of think about that embryo? Because I have embryos as well. And I often think about them and I'm like, they're just in the hospital there on ice. It's quite a mad thing to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, that, like, if you're going to have another baby, it's just there, you know, it's kind of ready and waiting. It's so strange. It really is. Like, thankfully my cancer, like, it has affected my, like, I'm in medical menopause at the moment, so I'm going through that and I can't conceive naturally. But if I was to get pregnant by IVF, like, I could carry a baby. It hasn't affected like my uterus, my womb, thankfully, because I know a lot of people who it has, you know. And it's just, that's such a comfort to know that in time, like, we always say we're definitely going to use it. We call it our frosty. So, and you know what, when I didn't get like 12 or 13 or 14 eggs, I was traumatized and I was like, oh my God, I only have one. And then me and Barry were talking about it and I was like, okay, but at least it's one, because it could have very easily been zero. And at least now we don't have to choose which one. We can just go and get that one done. You're not picking like a favorite child. Because it is, like, to you, it's so personal. And it's like, you know, they're your potential babies, they're your potential family. And I know that probably sounds bizarre to somebody who's never gone through it, but it's a very personal thing. So we definitely want to use it. And it's mad, I've always seen myself with a boy. I've always, like, maybe it's because, like, when I grew up, it was me, my mom and my brother at home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up with just me and my brother, so like, I always just kind of imagined my family would be a girl and a boy, the girl being older because I was older. So like, I just see myself like having a boy. I'm manifesting it. I'm putting it out there to the universe.
Well, that it clearly works for you, because I feel like you've manifested all of the good things that are happening for you right now. And I know it's going to be hard, really hard for you to say goodbye to Roisin and Barry and head up to Dublin and spend time in isolation. But I think underneath it all, you're really, really strong. And I think you know that you know, you've been here before, you know that time passes yeah. and you will come out the other side and be home this summer and get to walk Roisin into school on that first day.
Exactly. And that's what I'm aiming for. And you know what's so mad, Georgie, right? I was obviously so like dreading the goodbyes and dreading going to Dublin and not seeing, like, obviously I'll miss Roisin, but like what I kept thinking of is Barry's going to drive me to Dublin someday. He's going to leave me at the doors of a hospital and say goodbye for like a month. And like he's like my soulmate. That's so cringe. And he listens to this. He'd be like, I can't believe you said that. But like, we've never been apart for like, obviously besides hospitals and, you know, those visits, we've never been apart. Like I've never went away with the girls. He's never went away with the, but like since we've been together, we've just been together maybe for a night or two, but we've never like spent more than two nights apart. And I just hate that, like, because he's like my comfort. Like we love sitting on the couch together in the evenings and watching like stupid television. And, you know, like I'd be asking him, like, I'd be like, would you rather? And he's like, don't start with this now again. And, you know, just having that little comfort and having those like little conversations, and like, I'll miss him so much. But in saying that, when I found the lump and I thought that I was going to be going back into chemo for the next 3 months and then like potentially a transplant, like, because we were going, a fourth prognosis is not good, like, you know, or a fourth diagnosis is not good. The prognosis is obviously going to be poor. And like, you know, we were thinking quite negatively on it. But now with the fact that like the transplant was almost taken away from me, it's geared me up. It's given me a little bit of fire in my belly. I'm excited for it. I actually want to go and get it done because I know once that's it, that's it. You know, so I almost had to go back a step and go back to cancer, but I don't. So I am actually looking forward to just going forward. And it has made it a little bit easier because I know the goodbyes are very, very temporary. Like they are. The time does fly. Mm-hmm.
And it's given you this appreciation for it that, you know, obviously, you know, you were focused on the isolation, the missing your family, living in Dublin for 3 months and being lonely. But now you're like, no, I need to do this in order to get back to them. And I mean, thank God that everything has worked out so well for you this month. I was so relieved to hear your news.
Yeah, it has just been like, it's been a lot of relief and things are finally looking up. And, you know, like, it's good news after good news after good news. So I just want to keep that streak because I will be home before I know it. You know, the hospital is the longest kind of stint. Like it'll be 4 to 6 weeks that I'll be in the hospital for. After that, I'll be in an apartment with my mom, you know, so I will have somebody like familiar with me. It's not as if I'm going to be all alone. Like I will have my mom. If Roisin and Barry can get up like every weekend, fantastic. We'll have them. Like, you know, it's not going to be that bad. Like, I'd rather do that than go back to chemo for 3 months. So,
yeah,
I'll take it.
Well, we will all be rooting for you. I'm sure you'll kind of keep us updated when you have strength along this journey over the next while. And I just can't wait until this is all behind you, Shannon, because you just deserve so many good things out of life. And I know that your life after cancer is going to just be so amazing in every way.
Absolutely. And Big C and me will just be like Shannon Joyce, just a normal person.
I am so excited for you. And also just to say, your podcast, Big C and Baz, is brilliant. If people want to kind of learn more about your journey and, you know, the medical side of things, the family side of things, I think it's could help so many people. So just to thank give you. Your podcast a shout out, because it's brilliant. And I look forward to season two.
Thank you. We had season two all planned, and then because we were going to do like guests and stuff, and then COVID happened, so we couldn't do it. Because we did one with my mom that we put on season one, and it was so popular. People loved it. They were like, we want one with your dad and we want one with your nan. And I was like, okay, we'll get these, you know, and we really do. So that was all planned, but obviously COVID and then cancer, and, you know, so we will get to it, but just not right now.
Well, best of luck over the next few months.
Thank you so much, Georgie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Vichy. If you enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. If you want to learn more about my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford or head over to my website, thegoodglow.ie.